I'm Paul. I'm challenged by food, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Paul.
I'm grateful I was asked here to speak tonight at this Wednesday night Bellevue meeting. I'm thankful to the attending OA members and any visitors that might come in. I want to thank all those who have helped me recover to this point. I first came to my first OA meeting at the Wednesday night Queen Anne meeting in Seattle on December 14, 2016, 4 days short of my 65th birthday. I turned 67 on December 18th, 2018, so I'm a little more than 2 years, 1 month into my OA program of recovery and growth. On a good day, my current weight is now about 20 pounds more than healthy body weight, and with a continuing slow downward trend in my weight, and perhaps I'll lose another 10 pounds after that to find my spot in the healthy body weight zone. We'll have to figure that out as I get there. I'm very, very grateful and that OA and this fellowship have been instrumental both in improving the quality of my life and likely in prolonging my life. We say in OA that we not only carry the message, we are the message. And what is that message? It's a message of miraculous recovery. So for me, I not only carry the message, I am that message, that miracle. And the three miracles OA has given me so far is one is tremendous weight loss on a good day, about 133 pounds. And my weight swing as an adult has been at least 180 pounds from, I'm a 5'9 inch male, and from 137 as a 19-year-old to at least 317 pounds as I approached my 65th birthday. It's also given me the miracle of freedom from food obsession. I've been struggling with food obsession and overeating since I was born. From what my mom said and from what's happened since that time. And after living a life of yo-yoing, I'm hoping for a permanent freedom from the yo-yo syndrome after I reach healthy body weight. And for helping me to bring the skin in, I've had, that's the third miracle, is for helping me bring the skin in. And at the end of year one, my legs were tight and muscular, and the edema was gone, where the swelling would last an hour or two after I took my shoes and socks off each night. At the end of year two, my arms and chest became tight, and the man boobs are slowly disappearing, and the arm flaps are gone. In year three, I call that the mirror of the middle, and we'll just have to wait and see on that with what's going on right now. I want to talk first about the gifts of OA when I first got there. First, OA gives us a clean plate. We're told to take what we want and leave the rest, but we're strongly urged to take what we need and leave the rest. When I asked my sponsor, he said, "You mean like the steps aren't required? They're merely suggested?" He said, "Well, they're strongly suggested if your plane of life is going down in flames, then OA strongly suggests you grab a parachute and label the steps." And I like to say that OA gives me a bag of onions, because when you have that moment of desperation, that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, that's just a crisis, and you may or may not respond to it. But if you're lucky, you get a moment of clarity, and from there, you use that moment of clarity to reach out and get what we call the how of the program, getting honest with yourself as best possible, becoming open to change and open to being teachable as best possible, and become willing to go to any lengths to recover and grow. And on each of these, we discover more about ourselves in regards to these qualities as we peel back the layers of each onion as we work in the program. The OA also offers us directly the gift of acceptance, which is a form of love, and we say, "We will love you until you can love yourself." And I came into OA with a great deal of shame and self-loathing. It was hard for me to even hold my head up. And OA gives me hope that I could not find anywhere else. In life, I say I'm just another bozo on the bus. We often hear that said in OA. In OA Fellowship, I'm just another gator in the pond. Although my story is not like any other story I've heard in these meeting rooms, the reasons for my challenges with food are unimportant. What deserves my attention is there is this. There is a proven, workable method by which I can arrest my food challenges. And the solution offered by OA Recovery Program, if I work the program, gives me hope for a permanent solution to what has been a lifetime of binging and countering at times with diet and exercise. Although I'm not cured of the food challenges that face me, I am feeling greatly fixed by my program of recovery. Fixed does not mean cured. Fixed means being repaired to functionality. like a broken ceramic teacup, once glued back together, shows the lines where the glue was applied, and when held to the light, it may have a few chips missing as well. The damn thing can hold water. And likewise, I'm greatly restored to now being able to do normal tasks for people, ones that were very hard for me to do before. I can now bend over and tie my shoes. Before, I had to sit down to do that. I can get in and out of the tub without worrying about falling back in. Likewise with the bed, I can get in and out without falling on the floor. Full stop, O has restored me to functionality, and I'm very, very grateful for that recovery. I'm here to say today to say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like in the few years before I came to OA, again, my highest weight was 317. I don't know exactly my highest weight, but I know that I was at least there. And that's a conservative estimate, but probably very realistic. I walked in the door at 312, having lost 5 pounds on 3 separate diets in the 3 preceding years. One diet starting in January 2014, another one January 2015, third diet January 2016, all on the first. And they would work until they didn't work. And I'd lose some weight, 20, 30 pounds, feel very confident and cocky, and food started to slip back in, and I take the food back, and I go back to the old way of looking. In 2009, I had a lower body aneurysm where a blood vessel in my body had burst, and I peed out the blood, and I was put on a high dosage of high blood pressure medications. And by 2014, the phlebitis in my legs was getting so bad I could barely walk, even up a few stairs. And now I started to walk further in 2016 to try to counter that because my legs were shutting down. But and that helped. Again, I came into the program December 2016. But by December 2016, my right foot had gone completely numb. So although my legs were getting better circulation, it did not arrest the continuing nerve damage in my foot, and that was getting worse and worse. And I started worrying about, you know, someone chopping off my foot or something. I had caused 2 separate motor vehicle collisions by falling asleep at the wheel each time. By being very overweight, I tired easily. With very little exertion, I sweated and quickly and profusely. Simple tasks became hard to do, which I discussed before. Talked about the edema. And as I grew larger and larger, people took pot shots, insults and indignities by others started coming my way, things I had never experienced in life before. I broke at least 2 chairs by sitting on them. In short, you know, it was getting to be very hell-like to be so overweight. What it is like now, a bit over a year, 2 years and a month into the program. On a good day, I've lost, like I said before, 133 pounds of fat while adding about 5 pounds of muscle. So I have about 20 pounds more to go to hit well healthy body weight. I've been consistently improving my cardiovascular health by running since the first year of recovery. And then in the second year, by added weightlifting for the upper body. And in year 3, I've added crunches, leg lifts, and back lifts with a 25-pound weight. And I'm pushing myself away from the table a little more right now to lose the final 20 pounds. But trying to stay with the OA program and not do a restrictive diet. I've not had another aneurysm. That type of aneurysm is, lower body aneurysm is fatal 90% of the time. And obviously I didn't have the major vein because I'm here to talk about it. My current blood pressure medication is a half of what it was when I came from the high. And it's soon probably go to a quarter if things continue the way they're going. My pains in my legs are completely gone. And it's my belief that the veins are no longer narrowing to the point where blood is being cut off, the blood flow. My right foot, the numbness is gone, except for some minor tingling in the right foot big toe and the 2 toes next to it. So it gives me a reminder every morning when I step down that I'm in recovery and I need to keep doing my program. My sleep is much better. I should be on a machine, but I'm not. But I'm sleep. People around me tell me that no longer snoring and no longer gasping for air as I sleep. And even my ankles is gone. I do not tire easily now, especially with all the exercise I've been doing. People no longer insult me with insults and indignities, and they often get compliments about my fitness. Little do they know that I'm a compulsive overeater who's striving to continue with his recovery. this OA program, I didn't realize it at first. I thought I came in to lose weight and also to save my life. It teaches me to wrestle with Fred. And Fred is the primary purpose of the OA Recovery and Broker Program and the primary purpose of the first four steps. Fred is I call it ugly Fred because I use the vowel method as a 10th step. And for you, ugly Fred. Fred is fear, resentment, ego, and dishonesty. And they're the four horsemen of destruction when it comes to compulsive overeating. And the steps have greatly helped me. And in my OA Recovery and Growth Program, I have connected each and every day to my higher power since coming to OA on December 14, 2016, often striving to improve my conscious daily contact by having afternoon and evening, and what I call in-the-moment prayers. You know, bless you, change me. Holy moly, just to pause and reflect and then before acting. I go to a lot of meetings and events. I read OA literature almost daily. In fact, I do it daily, without question. And I'm reading old issues of Lifeline magazine. I've stayed at food abstinence since day one in OA. I didn't know what it meant, but someone said, if you're not eating right now, you're abstinent. And then I said, well, how do I keep this going? Well, just don't do this one terrible thing called relapse. So I set off on a quest and interviewed people and found out more and more about relapse. I found out it's not really that first compulsive bite, although that's a terrible thing to do. It's the erosion of programs. So that's encouraged me to build a strong program that's been greatly beneficial and has alleviated a lot of things that would have challenged me if I didn't have that strong program. I exercise routinely, striving to improve my health and vitality. And I remember each day what it used to be like, and I never want to go back to that hell again. And I remember when I tried to do it alone. I know now that I am never alone when I'm in OA. My greatest struggle has been to get honest with myself, and this honesty is not the cash register honesty of lying, stealing, or cheating. It's the honesty with myself, the getting out of denial or delusions or what I call mindless oblivion. And just to give an example, when I had the lower body aneurysm in 2009, went to the doctor. They sent me to the hospital for a CAT scan, and they did a scope inside my bladder. And the specialist said he found no evidence of a cyst, because I was hoping it was a cyst because I didn't want it to be a stroke or a lower body aneurysm. Excuse me, stroke was in the upper body. So I questioned the specialist. I said, was there any evidence whatsoever, or is there any possibility whatsoever that it was a cyst? And he said, well, we went inside with a micro camera and we examined it thoroughly, but it could always have been something we overlooked. So from that, it became a possibility to a likelihood to an almost certainty in my mind that it was a cyst. And never mind that also the other evidence that was a problem was with the blood pressure. My blood pressure was sky high. So where did I go? What did I do? Like Scarlett O'Hara, Fiddly D. Where did I go? Where will I go? Where should I do? I just can't think about this now. So tomorrow's another day, and so I just went to McDonald's every day and read comic books and put it out of my mind. Nothing to see here. The blood pressure is back to normal with the medications, and it was a cyst, and that was gone, and I was fine. And of course, my body continued to shut down with the phlebitis getting so bad by 2015 and 16. So with OA, it's helping me. I don't think, you know, they say we need to get honest about with ourselves, open to change and to be teachable and willingness to go to any lengths. But I don't think I don't think that kind of rigorousness was possible for me. I just got as honest, open, and willingness as I could. And as time was rolled on, I discovered more and more about how I can get more honest, more open, and more willing. And that has increased my program as I go. So my program is not static. What's the nature of my disorder? I was born December 18th, 1951, and I believe I was born with a physical challenge as a result of a physical trait, and that trait is I only need about 4 to 6 hours sleep each night, usually about five, and this means that I have more hours of waking hours to be active than the average person. My mother was like this in regard, her father was in like this regard, and he was 100% Swedish. And just from talking to others, I've discovered that it may be something, it's a Scandinavian type of trait that's been genetically passed down. In the last 10 to 15 years, they've discovered that the hunger hormone ghrelin is produced in the stomach, and now they've discovered it's during sleep. And it's the satiation hormone, leptin, is produced in the fat cells, often also during sleep time. And so having less hours of sleep, these things are out of whack for me, and it gives me mixed signals. And of course, I don't have a test person. I don't have a twin that's normal, so I don't really know. But there are scientific studies now, and so I'm not thinking I'm just crazy. The earliest question I can remember asking my mom when I was about 4 years old was, how do you know when to stop eating? And I don't think that's a normal question for a four-year-old. And she said, Paul, just slow down. Your body will tell you. And that's never worked for me. When I was six or seven, I overate one night. My father just came home from being overseas, away from, he was in the U.S. Navy. He was, I had been gone for a while, and I ate that large meal that day and beyond what I should have. And I was in pain, and my parents took me to the emergency room, and they admitted me. So I was hospitalized when I was six or seven in the greater Los Angeles area in 1958. Little did Roseanne know that there was a suffering child there at the time, but that has probably nothing to do with Roseanne. I was about 11. I joined Boy Scouts, and I remember at the break, there was a goodie table in the back, and I was determined to try one of these, one of each of the treats that or more that the moms had prepared, figuring that they were the best recipe that each mom had. And I couldn't understand why the other scouts stopped after one or two, and they had to call me away from the table. And I still was wondering for a long time what was wrong with those other guys. Now, the hormonal imbalance probably in itself was probably not enough to create problems for me, but it made me vulnerable to aggravating circumstances. One of the major aggravating circumstances is that I grew up in the early 1950s in Paris, France, where the U.S. program of the Clean Plate program, which had been in the States in World War I, now some people just followed it by tradition in their families, but it was presidential orders in Europe for U.S. personnel to make certain that U.S. children were not wasting food, and we wore badges that described how well we ate our meal before. Because the U.S. dollar was king, we had French servants, and so we had a French maid in the home. And the last thing they wanted was someone French or someone in the home, the local, to report that Americans were wasting food at a time when there were many, many children in orphanages of having lost their parents in World War II. The other aggravating factor was my mom was a great cook. I want to say, too, one thing about the Clean Plate program was actually a clean the table program, because if there was any food left in the mixing bowl, it went on my plate. And my mom was a great cook. My parents were children of the Great Depression. We didn't have the turmoil in the homes that you hear in a lot of OA people speak about. There was some arguing, but my parents had a pretty good marriage, and they stayed married together for 67 years until my mom died in 2014. So for a long time, I was the family garbage can. Food was not to be wasted, and food went on my plate. And so we couldn't have, there was a lot of love if I ate my plate. So of course, I was encouraged to do it. If I slowed down, there would be a reminder I wouldn't get dessert unless I cleaned my plate. And I mean, clean, it would be lick it clean. And then there was always the, you can't leave the table until you finish. And then finally there was corporal punishment, a belt or something like that. But that, I mean, I may have got the belt a few times, but not for eating. I was always a good eater. But that was pretty common in the 1950s. No one got time out back then or went to their room. That was not child abuse in the 50s. That was just normal. Spare the rod, spoil the child. In my youth, I would binge often, almost daily. But to control my weight, I would exercise a lot, especially with sports. I did some purging when I was a teen. I didn't like it so much, and it wasn't something that I turned to as my go-to. I would just do more exercising. I didn't realize I had a problem. It was just the way I was. In my 20s, I was a runner. I figured there are no fat long-distance runners, and so that's what I did. And by my 30s, I decided to start lifting weights so I wouldn't just be a skinny guy. My weight as a sophomore in college was 137, almost an anorexic weight. And I didn't really have any of the control issues of an anorexic, so I just wasn't paying attention. And once I noticed that my weight had gotten low, it was not hard for me to turn back to food and to get it back up again. By the time I got to my, and that was my 20s and 30s. In my 40s, I got busy with work, and one day I looked at the restaurant, and the other day I looked at the gym, and I said, I don't have time to work out. And I chose the restaurant and stopped exercising, figured how bad can it be, get, because I've always done it before where I'd whip myself back into shape. But by my mid-60s, I was 180 pounds over that weight of 137 in college. So what brought me to OA? On December 13th, 2016, I had an annual physical. I was 310 days at the weigh-in, but of course, after a meal, I was back to 312 pretty quickly. And that's the way I claimed when I walked into OA, and the 5 pounds is really a throwaway that I lost on the three diets the years before. The doctor told me to lose 100 pounds, and I said, well, don't you mean like 150? And he said, yeah, go ahead and lose 150. But I could have picked any number. He'd been seeing me for 20 years. He knew I wasn't going to do it. And he said he'd give me some pills, and he didn't say what the pills were for, whether they were an appetite suppressant, a nutritional supplement, or a placebo, or whatever. I was too fat to take seriously and too dumb to even bother to tell me what the pills were for. So I was having a bit of depression about that, and I went online and I saw some pain weight programs that I had. In 1973 in Boise, Idaho, when I was working for the federal government, I had jogged up to a table after a 3 or 4 mile run, and some lady was there, and I asked her for a pamphlet, and she said no. And I asked her why not. She said, well, you're too fit. You're not 10 to 15 pounds overweight, which we require. And I blurted out for the first time in my life, I said, I had a problem with food. You don't understand, I have a problem with food. She didn't say we don't care. What she said was, you just make the ladies in our organization feel bad. No, you need to toddle on. So I always felt that there was no hope for me, that there was no one like me, and I didn't know what to do. It was just the way I lived, and something I had to control by sheer willpower and go on extreme diets. And extreme diets, I'd lose my hair, get the bad breath, the fatigue, mental fatigue, yes, I could get there, but it wasn't sustainable. And so it was always yo-yoing. And what happened at my first OA meeting, that evening on December 13th, the day I went to the doctor, I found OA online, and I called the contact person for a local meeting, and I picked a meeting that I thought was hard to get to up in Queen Anne rather than go to the Ballard meeting next door where I lived, because I didn't want anyone to see me walking in. And there were four women there. And I was full of shame and self-loathing. The contact person had taken about an hour talking to me. I don't remember a lot of what she said, but I remember she talked to me about triggers. And so I shared at the meeting just a little bit. I shared that I thought pizza was my trigger food. And after the meeting, someone came up to me, a lady came up to me, and she said, Paul, pizza was my trigger food too, and I had a hard time giving it up. And I blurted it out quickly and loudly, I'm not giving up pizza. And all four ladies slowly looked over at me, and then they slowly looked away, and I felt sort of, and I had resolved I was going to do whatever I took when I went to that meeting, and here I'd already blown it in the first moments of the meeting, and I drove the drive home of shame. I did the litany. I can have a stroke, but I can't give up pizza. I can have phlebitis so bad I can barely walk. I can't give up pizza. I can be losing my right foot. I can't give up pizza. I can have, the edema. I can cause car accidents. I can't give up pizza. I can't give up pizza. So besides having the moment of desperation, this moment of despair, of realizing that the problem was me, not the weight, not the food, the problem was deep within me, and that I couldn't fix it, gave me a moment of clarity about myself. I was screwed. And so I went home, I had bought a book at the meeting, I read the first three chapters, and I got hope at that point. And I read the third step promise, which to me is the most important promise in all of our recovery, is it says, if you've truly taken the third step, you cannot fail to recover. And I thought, that is freaking it. That's the whole goddamn program. If I can do this one thing right, I'm going to recover. I'm going to live. And so I resolved to do whatever it took to get that. And the next morning I woke up, I typed into the computer, what is the religion that's going to make me skinny? And it came back, Buddhism is the religion of moderation. And I said to myself, frick it, I'm a Buddhist. So I went to 4 different Buddhist churches, read their books, went to their services, saw their DVDs, and I ultimately got a spiritual mentor and started practicing secular Buddhism. And I knew I was abstinent at the first meeting I went to, because they said, if you're not eating, you're abstinent. I just had to figure out what I, you know, there's only one thing I had to avoid, which was relapse. So I figured, well, I need to find out about this thing called relapse. So I started going to more meetings and started interviewing people and finding out what it meant to avoid relapse. And I found out it was not necessarily that first compulsive bite, because if I got to that point where I was considering taking it, it was probably going to be too late for me. It was the erosion of program. And so that knowledge helped me with the attitude that I needed to constantly be vigilant and strengthen my program. And that has been very helpful to me. I've maintained my abstinence continuously since I came to OA. And I also started exercising that next day. And I went on the online and I found different food plans and diets. And I found the food plan that I could live with. It was one that they claimed was most recommended by doctors, got approved by my doctor. And I've stuck with that food plan ever since. Let's see. I'm going to close with some final thoughts. I do not need to know how the sun operates to feel its warmth in my life. Likewise, I don't need to solve the mysteries of the universe to sense my higher power's guidance and power, that little voice within. So I can trust, rely upon, and act upon that support from my higher power. And I think it's important for me to remember every day that I'm worth having this recovery. I have enough, I do enough, I am enough. Every day and every way I'm getting better and better. And this is the best takeaway that I can share with you tonight. And that's it for me. I'm Paul, and I am a compulsive overeater. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.